Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of PYA Changemakers. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm really pleased to welcome this week's guest, Art Hill. He is the owner of Rogue Marine Business Advisors out of Florida. How are you, Art?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Well, the reason that I thought you would make a perfect changemaker is because you are taking the marine industry, yachting, boating, in a direction that it traditionally has not been taking for many a year, the digital marketing aspect of things. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you are doing with your company.
Well, thank you. So basically, you know, like you mentioned, I am, you know, helping marine marketers that are seeking modern solutions to take advantage really of the digital marketing, right? Right now we can communicate directly with our customers and we've never had the ability to do that at such scale. So, you know, when you really understand today's digital, you know, leverage and digital knowledge, it can be a little bit overwhelming. So what we found is that, you know, when we are reaching out to these yachting manufacturers and boat companies, we're helping them use what they have now to then start that process and then understand what are the steps they can take to leverage this. Because the delta between this industry that is so far behind and the companies that know that they can use this digital opportunity is enormous, right? So there's tremendous upside in really understanding how to communicate effectively through all these different channels, how to measure its efficiency, and then more importantly, how to make on all these different channels. So, you know, that's what we do. My background is an old advertising, I would say Mad Men era. So I come from agency landscape, digital marketing director for many companies, you know, McDonald's, you know, Melita Coffee, we've done Disney, you know, Transition Lenses, you know, you name it. So a lot of big brands, international, you know, footprint, but helping them communicate digitally as well. And that was all great and dandy, but I never put two and two together when I mixed my passion and my pleasure from boating and yachting and being a tournament captain and fishing relentlessly. You know, I never really married those two together. It was always work, and try and get a little chance to play until one day, you know, we had a company come along called Navico that owns Lowrance, which is a electronics manufacturer, one of the leading electronics manufacturer in sailing and fish navigations. And once I took that project over and it went really well, you know, I went home and asked my wife, I told my wife about it and say it went really, really well. And she was like, well, duh, you married your passion with your profession. And then it hit me like a rogue wave of emotion. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is what I need to do. This is what I need to do. I need to go out and help these marketers understand digital marketing so they can actually put good out into the world and get more people and more families on the water. So.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, in the past, we have seen yachting traditionally and boating traditionally have gone the magazine route or the book route or paper. Why do you think there is such a distrust of the digital marketplace at this stage? And why do you think it is advantageous for these companies to move to the digital marketplace?
Well, I think, you know, one, with the magazine and the print, you know, there's no issue, you know, there's no big magazine or kind of, there's not a light bulb moment of saying that, hey, they're losing market share by the minute, right? You know, we've seen newspapers and very well-known magazines go out of business, you know, over the last 5 to 10 years because of the digital age, right? So that's number one. Number two, it's the process of getting in front of those people, you know, takes 3-6 months sometimes just in production and then distribution. Meanwhile, you know, traditionally our marketing companies, we've already bought in to say, hey, we're going to buy these three magazines every year. It's going to cost this much and it's a flat fee. And we're going to send one vanilla ad and put that in there, and hopefully somebody turns to page 27 to see our ad, right? It's not that those things are dead or going away, but it's just not as efficient as us, the consumer, they're on their phone anyway, right? That magazine ad, you're paying for it to go and sit in an office somewhere where people aren't even going to offices in a 2020 environment, right? Let alone you're paying for that one piece of magazine to live on 8 different times. So the cost of it is really high in comparison to if you were to look around at that same office when people are in it and everybody's on their phone. Everyone, like people on their phone driving, people on their phone in the doctor's office, there's signs at restaurants, like the attention shift has just really gone away from that. And what we can do now is instead of doing one vanilla piece of ad that has to kind of hit everybody, we can do 5, 10, 15 different pieces of video and tell that story to the high net worth individual. Tell that story to people who live in Florida. Tell that story to expats who live in the UAE, right? We can go in and really get super contextual with creative. And we've never seen that before for pennies on the dollar in comparison to traditional advertising.
Well, how is it possible then for marine companies to really gauge the ROI, the return on investment, in deference to, you know, in the past, a newspaper or a magazine, a print would be able to say, we have this distribution. How is it possible that companies in the marine industry can actually gauge what their return on investment is with digital?
Well, it's actually a lot easier in digital, which is actually to digital's detriment, right? So the fact that we can do an Instagram story ad and swipe it up to our landing page and count how many people actually fill it out and then buy our product, that's both good and bad, because what that is, you know, CFOs who are also obviously revenue driven, they want to see that instant return. Whereas magazines, you can't track that person as quickly. That again takes 3 months to produce. The distribution is really slow. And then, you know, you can hack it by putting different phone numbers and different ads, but we just, the buy-in from the top has already done that for 15 years. So they just don't even challenge that, right? But because digital is new, they think, oh, it's just media and they're gonna buy attention and we can cut it off or stop it. If it works, does it not work? The ROI is predicated on how well you're good at doing that part of it, right? So if you're really good at the creative really works, then you'll see a tremendous ROI, no different than, you know, hiring the wrong staff member, right? You know, you have to be really good at doing that part of it. But to answer your question, the ROI is black and white because there's so much math around it. It's actually to its detriment that people say, okay, well, let me try it for 2 weeks. It doesn't work. Let me try it for a month and it doesn't work. It's going to still take time to tell that story. But the tremendous upside of when you find that one piece of creative or when you do hone that message in and you can scale it infinitely, the upside is enormous. And that's where you see Netflix and all these things like Pelotons, all these big million, multi-million dollars direct-to-consumer brands disrupt multiple industries because the scale, once you figure it out, is relentless.
Well, 2020 was the year of the webinar, obviously. And I think companies straight across the board all decided to do their own webinar and they started to do their own digital marketing. And some of them popped up with their own little podcast and some of them popped up with their vlogs. What types of mistakes are these companies making when they sort of jump in and try to do something that really isn't in their realm?
I think, you know, again, you know, a lot of them try and copycat. So they see one successful one and they try and go in to copy that. And it comes across as either fake or it doesn't really hit the mark of their consumer. And that's not going to give you the business return that you want. Number two, it's patience, right? A lot of those people that are finally get the buy-in from their head honcho, but only giving them a 30-day window or two episode on a podcast to say, does it work? Does it not work? Does it impact my business? Does it not? They haven't given it enough juice to really seek that reward on the back end, because at the end of the day, it's communicating with your ideal client. that relationship matters above anything you can see in an Excel spreadsheet. You know, that's why we say, you know, ideally the perfect execution is let's separate marketing from selling. So sales, a lot of people already have that sales organizations. We're going to do that. And we're obviously going to drive sales, but the marketing budget needs to be separate. So when it's separated out and we know, okay, if it goes down to dead zero, we tried our best and we're going to gauge it at the end of a year or 12 months or 6 months, then we hold that team accountable to why we either won or lost. But to judge it every 2 weeks or to judge it every 30 days really just does more damage, because you're not giving it enough time to actually impact your business.
Well, speaking of that, and you have said that in the past you've worked for some of the big guys, McDonald's, et cetera. You know, marketing is marketing, no matter what the industry is. Would McDonald's, someone like McDonald's, ever come to you and say, you know what, we're going to invest our marketing budget with you for the next 2 months? Would that make any impact for them whatsoever?
It depends. It depends on the tactic, right? You know, obviously the strategy matters, right? So if you have certain initiatives that you're doing locally, what McDonald's does is they have every data known to man, right? So they already have such a big, strong infrastructure in locations around the entire world. So they can actually have the ability to go into a small local market and say, hey, let's test this market and take for the first 2 months, we're going to attack it with that strategic plan of telling stories that's relative and creative to the individuals in it that's going to spend money there. So when we isolate that amount of small locations and we can say, hey, we're going to focus all of our efforts, cut everything else off and see if this works, then you can really show it that, hey, you know, we went up, we rose sales rose by 3% in a local market that normally, you know, year over year, we're usually down. So then we take that back and say, hey, now we have the winning formula that worked in this market. Let's scale it to some other different places. And when you have that behind you, they're all for it, because the CFO people love results, right? But you still need to at least isolate and cut everything else off so you can accurately measure, or give it enough time to really measure, okay, is this working or not?
Well, and let me ask you, in my experience, a lot of companies, their sole focus is captains and CEOs. Mm-hmm. What do you say to that?
I'd say there's more people, you know, more influential people than that, right? So a lot of the captains and the CEOs, you know, CEOs, they're notorious for bouncing around in and out of industry and from company to company. So if they're not financially driven right in the moment or have something that they want to push, they're not as reliable. But the captains themselves, they're great influencers, but a lot of the time they've already been entrenched in whatever brand loyalty they've had as they've come up through the ranks. You know, what we spend a lot of time is breaking up different customer types into 5, 7, 15 different ideal customer types. Who is your current customer? Who is your ideal customer? And then who is your future customer? And we create creative for each individual ones that's relevant to them. And back to digital having a tremendous upside. When you go after that future customer and they just become ingrained with your brand, the upside is exponential. That lifetime value of that customer is a lot higher, because say that deckhand is going to go out to be a captain. He's going to change, you know, companies, and he's going to bring your company in when he rises to power. And now you have a lot more years of profitability into a person that's a lot more ingrained into your ecosystem.
Do you think the marine industry is looking far enough ahead in regards to their customers?
Not at all. You know, and even with us, right? You know, we work with some companies right now, and we're even still fighting on trying to at least start that process. But still, some of the other guys, like, they're not even on the radar, right? They're just entrenched in what they do, and that's all fine and dandy. But, you know, again, when we want to talk enormous upsides in the opportunity at hand, you know, that's going to play out over time.
So because your business is marketing and digital marketing, what age do you think is the age that most of, you know, the yachting industry should be heading for right now in order to create a customer base that goes on for, say, the next 20 years? Because none of us gets into business for the next year. Most of us get into business for the long term. What age category do you think is very, very important for the marine industry to be hitting now?
I mean, I would say back to the digital focus, right? That mid-20s, that person who's just getting into yachting, whether he's crew or he's thinking about being crew, whether he's taking that captain's class, that age group is really, really attractive to us because they're digitally native and they're looking for this information anyway. And there's not enough people talking to them because let's just call it what it is. Like, yachting is such a close off exclusivity. You have to have the right tax return just to even step aboard this yacht at a boat show, right? It's so velvet rope that it's really closed off. And, you know, I think that's got to come to a head at some point, right? You know, especially in a world where we want to boast diversity and inclusion, right? This industry is very standoff and very, I would say, I don't even know how to say it. They're very resilient in their way of kind of keeping the way things are. And that's at a detriment to the industry because we're not really competing against other brands in yachting. We're competing against the outdoors and mountain biking and camping and other luxury things like buying a private jet and going to stay at a 5-star hotel in Dubai, right? That's our competition. So we need to really be a lot more inclusive to get people in to our industry and really welcome them and embrace them and speak to them in a relevant way versus being so standoffish.
So the good old boy club needs to end.
It needs to end or at least understand what's coming, right?
Yeah.
Because evolution is happening every day. And, you know, every day that industry is taking a little bit of a back seat, right?
Well, if you were to forecast what the ideal customer is for yachting in 10 years from now, what would you see or what do you think would be the customer that has the purchasing power in about 10 years?
Well, even in about 10 years, let's talk about the current one now, right? That 45-year-old entrepreneur, whether he's a tech startup or a CEO or CFO, that person's looking for ultra high net worth ability to purchase a yacht today, right? So he's definitely somebody that you want to get in front of. And he has 13 different psychographic demographics, you know, whether it's tech, African-American, Arab, you know, American, you know, there's different, many different segments of places where we can find that person who wants to have that family life versus an ultra high net worth person who lives in Miami. That creative is going to be very different to get that person. But more so, even building upon that, right? Back to that 20 something person who's yacht and crew or who is a tech startup and who's looking at these yachting companies as an aspirational thing. You know, we need to get in front of him and speak to him in languages that's relevant. Because as you know, a lot of boating manufacturers and boat buyers are loyal once they get, you know, to their second and third purchase. You know, the higher, the sooner we can tell that story and create that relationship, the better it is for us to create that loyalty over and over and over again.
Well, Art, you know, as always, it's a pleasure. And I really appreciate the information because, you know, let's face it, this industry really needs to change and change quickly because the times are changing quickly. It's
right.
10 years ago, things were a little bit slower. They just were 15 years ago. But we are now living at a time where, you know, what would take us 6 months 10 years ago is taking us 6 weeks now. And we have to stay on top of things. And in order for the industry to push forward and still have customers and still have clients come 10, 15 years from now, we really have to wake up and make some changes in the way we target the future generations coming into the boating and yachting industries.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more.
Thank you, Art. Well, we're going to make sure to provide all of your information below this interview when it airs. We really do appreciate your time. Once again, this has been Art Hill from Rogue Marine Business Advisors. Thank you.
Thanks, Rhea. See you soon.
You've been watching another edition of PYA Changemakers. My name is Rhea. I've been your host. We'll see you again next time.